Hello, welcome to the Hope Show or Gabfest. We're into 1982. Steph and Michael are talking about punk rock and we're picking our top 10 songs from each year. And as we say now at the start of every week, it just doesn't get any easier, Michael, is it?
No, it's incredible because we're picking five each. And I really struggle to condense my list of absolute favorite songs from this year down to five. Like I could do a series of great compilation albums of 1982 and Punk should have run out of steam by now, but it hasn't. Still no. Very vibrant.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I'm kind of taking a slightly different tack to maybe to yourself. It's not just say my top five or my five favorite songs. It's just five songs that I think were important for punk in the year, for punk rock, and the direction that it was starting to take. And you know, I've found over the last few weeks it's been very interesting because the roads and the new avenues that are opening up after that kind of first wave of punk rock or whatever. Some maybe, you know, are ones that we mightn't have listened to too much even in the last whatever 30 odd years or 40 years, but still important nonetheless. So that's there's a couple of those songs even in there tonight from me for that reason as well. So bear with me.
No, I think it's a great approach, and you know, I'm doing a bit of that as well. Sometimes they're my favorite, and sometimes they're things, you know, songs that might illustrate something about direction, as you say, that punk is going to take or that punk has come from.
Yeah.
So it's a lovely historical excavation.
It is indeed. Even the membranes are trying to sneak back in there.
They've earned their place for me.
Yeah. Well, we're going to go with the first song tonight. And it's a band that we've played a couple of times. Black Flag. This is TV Party.
TV Party tonight! TV Party tonight! TV Party tonight! TV Party tonight! We're gonna have a TV party tonight! Alright! We're gonna have a TV party, alright! Tonight! We've got nothing better to do than watch TV. Everybody's gonna hang out here tonight. All right. We'll pass out on the couch. All right. Tonight. We got nothing better to do than watch TV and have a couple of brews. Don't talk about anything else. We don't wanna know. We're dedicated to our favorite show. To the TV set all night
and every night.
Why go into the outside world at all?
It's such a fright.
We've got nothing better to do than watch TV and have a couple of brews.
TV news shows, what it's like out there.
It's a scare.
You can go out if you want.
We wouldn't dare.
We've got nothing better to do than watch TV and have a couple of brews. Don't talk about anything else. We don't wanna know. We're dedicated to our favorite shows.
Saturday Night Live,
Monday Night Football, Jefferson.
Without my TV for a day
or even a minute.
Don't even bother to use my brain anymore.
There's nothing left in it.
We've got nothing better to do than watch TV and have a couple of brews.
Hey, wait a minute. My TV doesn't work.
It's broken.
What are we gonna do tonight? This isn't fair.
We're hurting.
A song, what a great song. What, you know, don't even use my brain anymore, there's nothing left in it. What a song. Tell us all about TV Party and you, Michael Black Flag.
Niall, I'm a 57 year old man and I still think that's hilarious.
Yeah.
I think that's 3.5 minutes, that's as funny, that's as good a social satire as any episode, any of the best episodes of the best years of The Simpsons. You know, it just skewers, you know, American life. And
yeah,
to hear someone from a culture making fun of that culture when you don't live there is, you know, there's a bit of a sense of unease. And they just do it brilliantly. And it's funny, you want to sing along, but then you're thinking, okay, this isn't their view. So it is a parody song, but it's not parody like the Dickies. I think there's a real sense of menace about this. One of the first, possibly the first American punk video I ever saw. And, you know, they looked like people you wouldn't mess with. They looked intense, but with that intensity was this brilliant, savage sense of humor.
Yeah.
And I've heard that song hundreds of times and I still don't know what they're saying after they shout "No Jefferson." I don't even know if Jefferson's the name of a program, and then someone else shouts "No Hurrah!" And I still to this day, and I kind of like that I don't even know what it is, but it's also one of those list songs, and if you do a list song properly, you're documenting a very, very important part of popular culture, which is a very important part of life. And I think punk's job was to laugh at not the establishment, not only the establishment, but at popular culture and at things that young people thought were cool.
Yeah,
so sorry, that's a rant, but I just get so excited every time I hear that song.
So excited. And I know Repo Man came out a bit afterwards, but it was on the soundtrack to Repo Man, which is an amazing soundtrack. And it just, that song fitted in perfectly to Repo Man and the satire and whatever social commentary that was or wasn't going on maybe in Repo Man, but just a kind of, to me, it was perfect. It's a perfect song for the soundtrack. But you know, there's all that, and Black Flag were really making strides with SST and really leading the way with what they were doing with their tours as well, weren't they?
Yeah, and that's why I offer no apology for having them in 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
Because I think they were that important. And, you know, I was in suburban Dean's Grange, and maybe once a year, maybe twice a year, you'd get a copy. In my case, alone, I never bought Maximum Rock and Roll at this stage. I couldn't afford it. It was expensive. Yeah. But maybe someone like Mick McCaughan later, when I knew you, you'd borrow it.
Yeah.
And you'd read it and you'd read about these different scenes. Yeah. And you'd then realize, God, Black Flag, you know, I assumed, God, they must be as big as a big band in Ireland. You know, they must be making a comfortable living. Yeah. Then you realize these people are building a scene with nothing. Yeah. And they're probably getting in a van with enough money to get to the next city. And if they get paid, and sometimes they won't get paid, they have enough money to go on from there. Where I was thinking, God, they must be now making as much money as The Clash. You know, they were a big band in my head. And your point's really important. They were also the entrepreneurs of the underground, and that's why punk isn't just important musically. It's vital for understand business.
Yeah, like a few years later, the book came out that Maximum Rock and Roll published, a book, Your Own Fucking Life book. And really, Black Flag, you know, did a template for that book, you know, because they went out, they found people. And, you know, it was happening in other states, but Black Flag really started. They led the way, you know, while other bands very quickly followed with that kind of going out. Yeah, we want to get to wherever it is, whatever state we want to get to, and let's find someone and we'll play there. Yeah, it's great. Not waiting for someone else to do it for them was great. Okay, well, up next is a band. Well, I'll play it and we'll have a chat. It's Crucifix with Annihilation. So that's Crucifix with Annihilation. Now, there's a few things I just want to say why I included this one. So we mentioned earlier, punk is starting to take the different directions. And here's a sound that's starting to appear in the UK with bands like Discharge and in the States. Not so much in the States, but it's starting to appear in the States, this kind of peace punk stuff. But this band appeared on a compilation album, Not So Quiet on the Western Front, which was a double album that Maximum Rock and Roll, as we spoke about, and Alternative Tentacles put out. Fang were on it, 7 Seconds were on it, The Dead Kennedys, MDC. My introduction to this album was a cassette tape, and you know the story, Michael, cassette tape that I won as a radio prize from Alternative Sounds. But there was 3 albums, and again, doing the show has brought me back to, you know, what exactly was on that tape, you know, because, you know, the time is clouded. But it was 3 albums. Not So Quiet on the Western Front, which had 47 bands. This Is Boston, Not LA, which had 6 bands. And Flex Your Head, which was the Discord. And it was 32 songs, but there was, I think it was 8 bands, maybe Teen Idols, Minor Threat, State of Alert. Suddenly there's compilation albums being released of all this new music. And so you're getting it on, I was getting it on a cassette, and I was like, whoa, what's all this music over in the States? This is just incredible. It's like, sure, yeah, Black Flag or the Dead Kennedys, but the labels were putting out stuff, and it was loads of bands emerging and appearing. And, you know, Crucifix sang The Streets Are On Fire. To me, it was like DIY now is on fire. You know, look at all this music. Because you didn't really get to hear about it that much. Okay, you might get Maximum Rock and Roll, but actually to hear the bands, if you could tune in John Peel, as we mentioned, and if we were lucky that John Peel was playing, you know, 1 or 2 of these, then great. You know, we listened to Dave Fanning on the radio, but never heard this kind of music on Fanning. Or you'd listen to, like, John Kenny was on in Dublin, John Kenny's New Wave Rave, or Pat James, they were doing pirate radio shows. And they were playing some good music, but not this stuff. It wasn't going down to the underground that this was. And suddenly, like, it was like an underground. And, you know, when I won that cassette, I just kept playing it and playing it and playing it. And suddenly went, wow, this is all over the place. This is great stuff. So I wanted to play Crucifix to kind of mark that, and to mark the fact that this Not So Quiet in the Western Front album had 47 bands on it. Did you... Like, did any of these bands come onto your radar?
they came onto my radar, but I didn't have a very big record collection now. Like I was going to college and I had part-time jobs, but I didn't have a lot of money. So cassette tapes, you know, homemade cassette tapes were very, very important to me. And this is 1992. It really wasn't, I wouldn't have known anyone in 1992 who was buying this type of music.
Yeah.
And it really wasn't until 1983 and really into 84 when I got to know Mick McCaughan and all of his crew, people like Barry Cook, who were into music, that you had a better chance of hearing more. You know, I was quite limited. I was thoroughly loyal to the small number of groups that I was hearing. But I was seeing these names and imagining what they sounded like, but I didn't have exposure. Yeah. And your point is really important. Pirate radio was vital. If you'd had internet radio back then, it would have been such a different movement. But it was hard, to really hard in Ireland to hear these bands.
Yeah. But that album especially, like, there's 47 bands on it, and it's just great. And over the next few weeks, there's a couple of other compilations that I want to kind of bring in, you know, that really helped. We did it a couple of weeks ago with Bullshit Detector, the Crass one as well, you know. So it's helping you're helping the bands get out there. So it's really good. Okay, well, we're going to move on. Next song is Theater of Hate. Do you believe in the Westworld? We'll be right back. So, Theater of Hate, Do You Believe in the Westworld? Punk Rock 1982. The bass line on that, I love it. It's kind of like nice and sleazy. It's that kind of Strangler's bass line, you know, but great stuff. And it's a kind of that haunting sound that we spoke about there last week. Great stuff. Really good. Really good stuff. Can you remember them playing McGonagall's?
God, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I had seen them the year before at Futurama, and they were astonishingly powerful. And I, you know, like Gang of Four were, and I just assumed I'll never see them in Ireland. So when they were booked, it was around the same time that Killing Joke were booked. And, you know, when I saw Killing Joke were coming to Dublin, I really thought, this is a great moment in my life. And, you know, sure enough, they cancelled, allegedly because of, and possibly because of threats made to the band. So natural that bands coming over from England would have been worried about threats. But Theatre of Hate came. It did you go, Niall, or were you too young?
No, I remember it being on. My brothers went, and I remember listening to Theatre of Hate. I loved them. But I was too young. Wasn't allowed.
It was a fantastic gig. The only band who were great got dogs abuse from the crowd. They were called Amuse. It was Dave Long, who then went on to be in
Into Paradise,
and I think Shane O'Neill, who was in Blue in Heaven. It was a very, very partisan crowd. It, you know, the punk gigs in Dublin, you know, there was an edge to them. It wasn't full by any means. It might have been half, maybe two-thirds full. I don't remember it being a really cold night, but I was just ecstatic. That music, this aggressive and tuneful, that there's something about Theatre of Hate that combines tunefulness and aggression. And, you know, we talk about punk being the lyrics, punk being the music, punk being the style, punk being the attitude, maybe punk being the politics. But this, you invite me onto the show to look at it year by year, makes me think about punk, the sound, now, not the music.
Yeah.
And I think this single sounds brilliant, and it's produced by Mick Jones from The Clash.
Yeah.
And it's on an independent label. And I don't know, you would know these artists better than I would, but I don't know, did Madonna ever produce, you know, a 7-inch single for an independent group? Did Christa Berg? I would say that they didn't. Yeah. So
I'm not sure I'd know that one.
A really important thing about punk, that a band as big as The Clash, as busy as The Clash, still took time out to do something like this.
Yeah, yeah.
And at the, I went over, I was at the gig and I saw Kirk Brandon walking around. He had a cup in his hand. It looked like tea or coffee in one of those plastic, you know, disposable cups. So, you know, I'm extremely shy and extremely introverted, but I just wanted to say hello to him and to thank him for coming to them. So I went over and said, thank you so much. It means a lot that you're here in Ireland. And he said, well, you know, my family are from Cork. I've been here loads of times. You know, which is great to hear.
Yeah.
It's lovely to hear. Yeah. That was the end of my banter. I had nothing. Nothing to say after that.
Yeah.
But I remember thinking, God, this is so great, because I didn't expect a band that good. I know that's a terrible thing to say. I didn't expect them to come to the capital city of Ireland.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose there wasn't too many bands coming over anyway. So you know, you'd reason to have that expectation. But yeah, no, they were great sound. Excellent. Anything else you want to add on Theatre of Hate before we move on?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was very, very difficult to pick a Theatre of Hate song from 1982, because I waver between thinking The Hop, which also came out the same year, is a better song than this. So extraordinary singles, extraordinary sound.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Great, great. Up
there with
great
Killing
sound.
Joke for me.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, great, great song. Okay, let's move on. So we move on to next song is the Subhumans, who released, I think it might have been their second seven inch in 1982, and this is Reason for Existence.
Hello.
Just for a second after listening to that. That's the Subhumans' Reason for Existence. The second EP, as I say, is on Spiderleg Records. And we mentioned Flux, which was Flux Pink Indians' label. So there's something starting in the UK. You got Crass, that influenced Flux, who influenced Subhumans. Subhumans then start their own label, Blurg, you know. And to me, what I took that in that song was that the band were putting it up to me going, what's your reason for existence? Now, I don't think they actually meant that in the songs, but I think they were challenging bands, you know, and maybe people to walk the walk, asking, you know, does your lifestyle contradict the words you sing? You know, and so to me, that like punk rock is becoming personal. It's becoming, you know, a way of life for people. And these bands are starting to, you know, I suppose it's the Crass and Flux. It's from a more anarchist background, but it's they're living the lifestyle that they believe in. And so there's this whole new kind of breed of punks starting to appear. I picked that song because, Subhumans play fast music, but it is very tuneful. I'm amazed at how many words Dick gets into a line and how he can sing them and seems to sing every single syllable, you know. It's not just, you know, he gets those words out and it's just amazing. Still amazing, I think, you know, 40 years on, they're still playing the songs with still that incredible energy. Now, the following year, the Subhumans played in Dublin, to me, is like a real pivotal moment in punk rock as well, you know, and we might talk about it, you know, when we get to 83, but they played in the Youth Expression Centre, brilliant, brilliant set of gigs. And I think helped kickstart DIY stuff in Dublin. So again, a hugely influential band and a hugely important band starting around then. And this is what's happening in 82, that these bands are going, yeah, we'll bring out, you know, our own records, we bring out other people's records because we think they deserve to be heard. And then that band in itself starts bringing out records. So it's just like it's an iteration. It's just follow one thing following on from the other. And it's kind of, you know, I don't know where it ends, but it just keeps going after that, where the people say, yeah, of course we can do this. And yeah, you're a good band. I'll bring out your record, but you know what? Maybe you should bring out the next one yourself. Here's how you do it. And I think, you know, that's a strand that's coming along with punk, and Subhumans typify that. What about, I know you may not have been, again, maybe similar to Crucifix, Subhumans may not have been on the radar, but you've certainly seen them enough times and you've heard a lot of their songs since.
Yeah. But I'm just thinking about what you said, Niall, and I think you're right, because 83 is the first time I would have been aware of the Subhumans as a band that were coming to Ireland, and it made me think, God, are these bands going around to little scenes like the Dublin one? And are they doing that in Germany and France and Belgium, and kind of lighting the fire of inspiration, or yeah, telling people you can do this without, you know, roadies and hotels? And they were very important for me from that point of view. I thought they were a sensational live band. And like TV Smith, they're a band that shouldn't be as good. If you're judging people, thinking, oh, well, they've been around a little while, you know, like the Rolling Stones. But they're every bit as good and vibrant and dynamic and exciting now as I remember them being when I first saw them. And I wasn't there at the moment that they started playing gigs in England. But, you know, I got to see them early in Ireland, and I think they're an absolutely brilliant band. I think he's a great front man, and they're... You kind of opened my eyes to this. They're kind of a manifesto band. There's a lot to take away. It's not just, hey, we're here to entertain you.
Yeah.
But isn't it incredible that they can entertain you and then make you absolutely question everything about your life?
Yeah.
Some entertaining.
Yeah, yeah. The Subhumans were the band that made me start thinking about animal experiments. You know, the song Rats, and that was the song that made me think about, why are we using animals again? And isn't it amazing that music, and this kind of genre of music that starts, you know, whatever, back in, we may say 76, and some people may say before that or whatever, but as an idea, suddenly you're starting to, that one of the roads that it's gone down are bands that are, yeah, music is really important, but so is the way you live your life. You know, it's very interesting that strand is starting to appear. Okay, move on. Next song, very interesting selection, and I can't wait to have a chat with you about this song afterwards. This is Stiff Little Fingers, Bits of Kids.
Sweet!
Okay, that's SLF, or Stiff Little Fingers, with Bits of Kids. And it's kind of almost from their forgotten album, isn't it? Now Then, which is their fourth album. And the reason why I'm very interested in this is because if you'd have asked me to pick my top five Stiff Little Fingers songs, this probably wouldn't be in it, but it's still a great song. So, there's no reflection on that. And the top five wouldn't have been released in 1982 anyway, so it wouldn't have been competing this year. But then when you listen to that song, it's a sound that has appeared in so many American hardcore bands from the last decade. So the floor is yours, Michael. Bits of Kids. What made you, and what gave you the reason to put this in your top five for 1982?
November 82, I get to see Stiff Little Fingers for the first time in the TV club. So, that's a thrill. And I think sometimes the songs that are, just out when you see a band really stay with you. They become part of you. And I completely understand what you're saying about some of their earlier songs. But I think, to me, this is one of the great songs of 1982, because it shows that fire and passion of punk hasn't gone away. And also it shows that anyone who thinks that Stiff Little Fingers are just first album or the first two singles and all you need to know about them, you're completely wrong. This is a long-running, really, really high-quality rock band, but also a pop band, which is difficult to do. And I think this is a marvelous song for the year, for 1982.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The producer is a guy called Nick Tauber, who produced Whiskey in the Jar.
No,
so the sound of Ireland's first rock song that becomes a hit.
Yeah.
It's this guy. And he also produced Where Have All the Boot Boys Gone for Slaughter and the Dogs.
Yeah.
And he produced Running Riot for your mates, Coxsparrow. So, if you want to trace how rock, the sound of rock was smuggled into punk, and I think it was to punk's benefit, because these were very, very talented studio technicians.
Yeah.
And they made the punk bands sound fantastic. And, like Mick Jones did with Theatre of Hate.
Yeah.
I think they really made punk rock very accessible without it losing any of its passion. And I think Stiff Little Fingers have so many great songs after the songs that get acknowledged as, there's some great Stiff Little Finger songs and there's some great punk songs. But there's so much more to this band, I think.
Yeah, no, and I'm delighted you put them in there. And again, it's that, to me, the more you listen to Stiff Little Fingers in recent years, I'm going, the influence this band has had on so many American kind of, social distortion type bands, those kind of, hardcore bands that, are really popular. And you hear it in the sound, and you hear it in this era, Stiff Little Fingers, just as much as any other era, And to me, that says a lot as well. So it's great. It's great that it's in there. Next one up is Kick Out the Tories, Newtown Neurotics.
Let's kick out the Tories, the rulers of this land. For they are the enemies of the British working man. Good men say nothing. Evil will triumph.
don't believe everything that you read in the press. Don't believe, don't believe, don't believe what you read. Don't believe, don't believe, don't believe what you read.
So let's kick out the Tories, Newtown Neurotics. 40 years later, it's still relevant for some people in the UK because they're still singing that song and they've been singing it at various times and it's been like a theme tune for some people. Double A-side single, That With Mindless Violence. CNT Records, which is a CNT Records, which is a very interesting label that's appearing in the UK. And there's just something about the Neurotics that appealed to me. So I heard this single and I think I must have heard it on John Peel, and I got this record, and you know, I'm 14 and it was just something about it, because you know, I liked the politics of punk. That was what was appealing to me at that stage. The politics was getting there, you know, the Clash got me interested, the politics of the bands like the Subhumans. But I liked the tunes, you know, and so the Neurotics had that kind of tuneful music, but were still kind of saying things, and you know, they were slogans, they were very easy to understand slogans, and they were very, you know, straightforward. And you know, with CNT, it was starting something, and the Neurotics, that was their first single. You know, then they produced a bit more stuff after that, and of course we saw them, Cambridge, whatever. Harlow, a few whatever number of years, wasn't it? Harlow the Square, wasn't it? At their one of their reunion gigs or whatever. But really good kind of, you know, it's overtly political stuff, but you know, really good. And to me, that's another road that kind of punk is starting to appear for punk as well. It's this kind of tuneful, you know, overtly political, but still, you know, and the Neurotics went on to support when the miners went out on strike. They were huge supporters of, you know, the miners' strike and what the miners were trying to do. And it became, I, you know, there was more, you know, the Redskins were on CNT. CNT as a label was a political, I think John Langford was involved in actually CNT Records, who's from the Mekons and the Three Johns. But there's, you know, another angle appearing, and the Neurotics were part of that angle.
You know, it's the longest song tonight. I thought the Theatre of Hate one would be the longest because it's, you know, it's over the 3 minute mark. Now, I don't know anyone who loved the new Neurotics as much as you did. You know, you were the Neurotics fan to me. So it wasn't like there was a huge, you know, group of Neurotic fans in Dublin. Were you able to get the records in Ireland, or were you buying them in England?
So I was able to get them in Ireland. That 7-inch again was got in Golden Discs on Liffey Street, Kick Out the Tory 7-inch. And then the first album I got, I think it was in Basement. So Base X, I think it would have been Base X when the first album came out. Base X was a great shop. When I think, I don't know, the Base X would have, I'm not sure when it opened, on Bachelor's Walk. I'm guessing 83, but I could be completely wrong with that. I'm guessing it's a little bit later, because that's where I started picking up the likes of Three Johns, you know, and New Model Army. And, you know, so there was some really good stuff in Base X and the Neurotics later stuff, and Attila the Stockbroker as well. But I got that record. I wrote to the band straight away and got a reply, you know, a couple of months later or whatever. But like that was kind of a band like that, and Attila as well, Attila the Stockbroker. And Crass and Flux, you'd get these records and just write a letter to the band and go, wow, I really like that record, or I'm doing a fanzine, will you answer some questions? And it made it so accessible.
Vital part of this whole scene,
yeah,
or whatever you call,
yeah,
like environment.
Yeah. But it was amazing that you just write a letter. You know, I wrote, and Steve Druitt, the singer from Newtown Neurotics, writes back, and it's like, wow, this is, of course. Well, why wouldn't he write back? I'm writing to him. But, you know, before that, you would never imagine or never dream that somebody in a band would take time out, write a letter, put it in an envelope, put a stamp on it, and post it back to you. You know, they'd be far too busy because they're in a band. But this, you know, the punk rock thing makes it so much more accessible, and opens up a new avenue. And the Neurotics, to me, were an important part of that. Dead Joe, The Birthday Party is the next song. So from Australia, The Birthday Party. We've got over to Australia now with our journey of punk rock. This was their fourth album, their last album, and my memory of this, I think this was my introduction to the band, because I have a memory of this being on the old Grey Whistle Test. I'm watching it and going, whoa. So if it's not, I'm pretty sure it was this song, because that's what I remember it as being. And it made me want to find out more about them.
This is really important, because punk wasn't just Los Angeles and New York and London. And, you know, the birthday party, this was on a local label. I don't know much about the label. I think it was a record shop, Missing Link. So punk was stimulated in other places by local entrepreneurs who thought, okay, they're a band. They're making a bit of noise. They've got a bit of attitude. And to me, it's tonight's show is very macho. And I was a little bit concerned about that. But this song was co-written by Anita Lane, who sadly died this week. So often the women don't get noticed, but they're significant contributors behind the scene. The birthday party were just full on, such an onslaught. And obviously Nick Cave has gone on to be probably a cultural figure, a significant cultural figure over the 5 decades. And you wouldn't have thought that by listening to this. So that's why punk is so important, is that it gave these artists the opportunity to get noticed, to get their first break, to get a bit of support, and to get on that ladder. And where they went, now it might have been very far away from punk, but I think the entrepreneurial environment created by punk is every bit as significant as the music. And, you know, this is still a glorious mess to hear.
Yeah, yeah.
But it spiraled into places that you wouldn't have predicted from there.
Yeah, yeah. And it is
great to get Australia, because there was other great stuff from Australia before that we didn't get in, you know, the Saints in particular, the Laughing Clowns. But it's great to say, you know, in our totally unscientific survey of 5 songs each from each year, that it's not just America and Britain.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And it is a glorious mess, as you say. Excellent. Okay, this might be a mess. I'm not so sure about glorious, but certainly, the next song. This is GBH, City Baby, Attacked by Rats. Okay, GBH, City Baby, Attacked by Rats. We spoke earlier about Dick Heumann. So many words in a line, you know, so many words in a song, and he seems to sing every syllable. I'm not sure Jock Blyde followed the same pattern with GBH, but they were putting a lot of words. there's a dark and there's a menacing side of punk starting to appear. Possibly Macho, as you mentioned, it was the Exploited. We were talking about them last week. It becomes known as UK 82 eventually. A sound appears, and we played Discharge as well. A D-beat sound appears, and this is the origination of that sound. You know, and I agonized, agonized as much as you can agonize over whether you put something like this in. And it's not in my top five favorite songs for 1982. However, I do think GBH have a place and an important place in this whole history of punk. This sound appeared. There's a huge influence. I think when we were talking about the Exploited, I mentioned about, like, you know, thousands of leather jackets appearing with the Exploited. GBH are up there on all the leather jackets, aren't they? You know, and it's the leather bristles, studs, and acne punk rock that I stopped listening to after GBH. I'll admit that. However, you know, there's a huge number of people that this appealed to. You mentioned there last week as well about metal, and, you know, I didn't come from a metal background at all with this, and same as yourself. I suppose I didn't come from any background, really. It's just kind of punk, really, is the only kind of music that I really started listening to, other than maybe a Shawadi Wadi record before any of the punk sounds. But there's so many people who are listening to metal, you know, like Motorhead or whoever, who heard GBH and then got switched on to punk as well, you know, so have come from the other way in. So GBH helped open up those doors. Yeah, it's dark, it's menacing, it's the start of UK 82, and this is our punk year, 82, so that's how they're in there for me. What about you, Michael? Have you listened much or paid much heed to GBH?
Well, you've just made me think of something, that this was rock, this was metal, and that must have pulled a load of people who now wouldn't probably have liked the Birthday Party or the Subhumans or Crucifix or Black Flag. They would have thought that that's silly. But I'd like your idea that people who liked rock music, who liked metal, and, you know, I had no background in metal. We had no rock records in our house at all, apart from Horse Lips, because I think a lot of Irish houses had a Horse Lips record. But that's really interesting that this would have pulled. Niall, can you tell me more about D-beat and, you know, what? Because it seems like that then becomes central to the punk sound. What does it represent to you? Or,
well, yeah, well, it's the Discharge kind of sound. It's that, and it's the fast drums, you know, that kind of double bass drum, and it's just kind of play as fast as you can and sing as fast as you can. And then, you know, there's bands like, you know, Chaos UK start appearing, and Disorder start coming, and it's like a chaotic mess. You know, it's not a glorious mess, it's a chaotic mess. But the D beat really is that drum sound, that kind of nearly like a double bass drum sound, you know. And bands like Discharge and GBH were really the forerunners to that sound in punk. And yeah, like, you know, D beat are still gone. These D beat bands are still, you know, it's a huge genre within punk rock, you know. There's probably just as many records of DB coming out, you know. It got political for a lot of people as well. And again, it brought people who had a metal influence and introduced politics into their thinking or through those bands. This is the kind of starting point, really, well, along with Discharge, for that DB sound.
See, I don't think it's a mess. I think it's very precise. Like, I think they hold it together really well.
Yeah, I suppose they do. Yeah, because there's an awful lot going on, isn't there?
Precise.
Yeah. Yeah, GBH. Yeah, maybe bands like Disorder, and maybe they do. Maybe there's an initial impression of it being a mess. But yeah, sure. You know, you have to play really, really fast and try and stay in time with the, you know, the guitarist has to try and stay in time with the bass player who tries and stays in time with the drummer, you know. The singer doesn't really matter because they're just like, they can skip a few words to get to the end of the sentence. It's almost like that, isn't it? It's like a race till the end of the sentence. Yeah.
Full on. Sprinters. Olympic sprinters.
All right. Well, so let's move on. Perker Pilnik and Googleplex is up next. Very interesting. And another one I'm delighted that you picked. We'll have a listen to it and have a chat about it. Michael, my introduction to Icelandic punk rock was probably KUKL, who had a record out on Crass, and then became, you know, some of them became Sugar Cubes, and you know, there's a whole history there. Perker Pilnik were prior to that, and I wasn't really aware of them on, you know, until trying to chase down or get more information about the Sugar Cubes. What an erratic, yet another glorious kind of sound, isn't it? Similar to a lot of the Death to Trad Rock bands that start appearing a couple of years later, which is interesting. You know, it's like a precursor to one of those bands. That could be one of John Robb's type bands there. It's a good song.
Absolutely, and I think that's a great point, Niall. To me, one of the top 10 greatest punk bands of all time are the X. And in my, you know, to my limited knowledge, you know, I'm no expert, I can see a relationship between this and the X. You know, it seems it's punky, but it's got that very, very frantic, frenetic jazz in there as well. To me, this is very European.
Yeah.
But then when you go back, or when you see where this could go forward to, you think, God, this could really, really have lovely overlaps with African music, which I think the X have done exceptionally well. But again, as you say, Per, I was aware of, I think I heard of Perker Pilnik. I have difficulty saying the name. Through John Peel, through tour, they toured with The Fall. And then that sound, or those people, become the sound of the Sugar Cubes.
Yeah,
And to me, that's a huge step forward in pop music, the Sugar Cubes. And then the fact that Bjork comes out of this band with that sound, and no more than Nick Cave, becomes one of the central figures in music culture for 4 decades. So again, it just shows that punk may not have been the final sound, but punk was often the kickoff point. And Iceland, the population of Iceland is smaller than the population of Cork. And yet it has delivered so much fascinating culture.
Yeah.
And you know, from obviously Bjork to Sigur Rós.
Yeah.
I think it just shows that punk went to places and punk made an impact on places, even with small populations. There were enough people fired by punk. There's a little punk museum, I don't know if it's still there, in Reykjavik.
No way.
With little bits and pieces. It's downstairs.
God,
An old Adonis abandoned station or something.
Wow.
But punk mattered to little places like Ireland.
Yeah.
And beyond.
And you mentioned earlier about the entrepreneurial spirit, and what was coming through punk and Perker Pilnick and the people in that, the people in the Sugar Cubes, started Bad Taste Records, which is, you know, an Icelandic record label. It's a really big, you know, Icelandic record label. And they also publish books and poetry and cards and stuff. And, you know, they've carried that spirit through their work, you know, beyond just the music. And it's a very established but positive and ethical business in Iceland. So it's interesting.
Yeah, another totally unexpected outcome of punk.
Yeah, yeah.
The do-it-yourself doesn't mean do-it-yourself and shut up, you know, and don't ever influence mainstream culture. Do-it-yourself can really compete when it's done, as you say, positively, ethically, mindfully.
Yeah, yeah. It's
terrific.
Very good. Excellent. So for the last song tonight, we have a band called Blitz. Now, my memory of Blitz, of the Blitz, the band, was seeing them on the Tube TV show. And I just thought that they were amazing, to be honest. And it's that kind of street punk sound, you know. 1982 was the year that the Fourth Eye album came out, the Fourth compilation. So there was Strength Through Eye, Carry On Eye, whatever they were, you know. Interesting, you know, that, you know, when you look back, that suddenly you're at the fourth one, you know, and the Blitz were part of that, you know, collection. But the Blitz had something else about them. They, I don't know, they just seemed to have something else, and it wasn't, you know, some of that Eye stuff was a bit, a bit questionable, maybe from our perspective, and it was getting, you know, getting a bit of a bad rap, you know, for having some kind of right wing or fascist overtones. But Blitz certainly weren't part of that. But when I saw them interviewed on the Tube, like, they were just like a gang of young fellas, you know, but they were making a great noise, and it's certainly a noise and a sound that has influenced a lot of American hardcore bands, as we kind of mentioned Stiff Little Fingers earlier on, Blitz or that. So I've picked Voice of a Generation. We're after speaking when I shouldn't have probably spoke, because we should have played the song first of all. But I was going to play a song called We Are the Boys, but you referenced it earlier on. Tonight is very macho, isn't it? It's very male. So I didn't want to end it with We Are the Boys, because I didn't want it to sound like, you know, and maybe I should have, because that's the reality of what we've picked for tonight. But Voice of a Generation kind of spoke to me a bit more anyway, and it was the album, from the album Voice of a Generation. So we played a bit Blitz, this Blitz song, come back and have just a little quick chat after.
We'll be right back.
So, Michael, Blitz, Voice of a Generation. It's like punk rock has now kind of given a voice out and has done for a few years, but there's the street punk bands are starting to appear, you know, the working class street punk bands, and Blitz are one of those, and they're coming out and singing. They don't want to be a pawn no more. So it's interesting. But it's this road that's happening. There's roads appearing. There's the kind of the eccentric, the kind of jazzy influence almost that Perker Pilnick was having. There's that still the haunting sound that Susie would have had, the birthday parties that's still there. There's the punk rock of SLF. There's the hardcore, the American hardcore stuff. And then there's this kind of UK, there's the anarcho stuff, and then there's the UK 82. That's kind of where we're kind of going with, probably a lot more when we start post-punk and start thinking about it a bit more. But Blitz, you know, there's a whole legion of people now starting bands in working class areas. And, you know, a lot of, you know, the skinhead bands, and a lot of music is straightforward music. And some of them are trying to say stuff and some of them aren't, but you know, it's an interesting road that punk rock, it's an interesting ingredient now, isn't it? You know, punk rock is all these ingredients and here's a new one into the mix.
Yeah, it's a broad church now. Like I don't think punk rock is a narrow definition. You know, when people say punk, I still don't know what it means.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a big, big category. Yes. And even by 82, you know, we're only 5 years in from 77.
Yeah.
Arguably the year that it emerges into the mainstream. It's going in so many different directions,
yeah,
that continue then to either carry on down that suggested route or spiral out of control ways.
Yeah. Okay. Amazing. Yeah, it is amazing. Yeah. It's been fun again, Michael. Thanks for having this chat. And we go back to 1983 next week, and we'll try and pick five songs that reflect what we were listening to and what were our favorite tracks maybe from 1983 next week. Thanks very much for
thanks very much, Noel. And thank you.
Thanks to anybody there who's listening in. Really appreciate it. This has been the Hope Show. Gabfest with Michael and myself, Niall, and it's 1982. Goodbye.